Welcome back for another episode of the Unscripted Small Business Podcast. Today, I'm joined by the powerhouse, Francie Jane, who is the founder and CEO of Terawatt Group Coaching. Terawatt is on a mission to help organizations thrive by reducing employee turnover and building cultures that actually support growth, well-being, and long-term success. In this episode, we dive into the realities of modern leadership, what it means to retain great people, how to build a culture of connection, and why coaching is one of the smartest investments a company can make. Francie also shares her journey from navigating career pivots to creating a coaching marketplace that matches organizations with expert coaches who drive real, measurable change. So whether you're a business owner, team leader, or just someone passionate about workplace culture, this conversation will leave you inspired to rethink how we lead and support our teams. Let's dive in. Francie, it's so wonderful having you in the studio today. Thanks for being here. I'm really excited to talk about your business and what you do, because I think a lot of times businesses, you know, have turnover problems, or they might think about coaching to elevate, you know, that employee stamina, but maybe they just don't want to hire somebody right away. And so I'm really excited to dive into what you do and how that's applicable for business and why they might want to consider coaching. Tell us about your background just to kind of get started and what got you started in business coaching.
Okay. Well, I'll just start by saying I'm not a coach. I am just a person. Actually, I think what started the whole thing is that I've switched careers many times, and it doesn't at all faze me to switch careers. I find it really like interesting and fun. And so I was aware of a statistic about the loss of manufacturing jobs. I'm leaving the States, and it was in the millions. And I thought, wow, is that statistic really true? And it is, like, from 2000, like, millions and millions of manufacturing jobs have left the U.S. Like, over, possibly even over 10 million. Like, it's a lot of people. Wow. And so first I was like, is that statistic true? And so I researched it, and it's true. No, there's no exact number, but like, it's true. And then I thought, well, gosh, I mean, okay, well, who's helping those people? Because, well, obviously, this is America. Like, things, there's a boom and a bust all the time, and people believe in capitalism. But, like, there must be some place where someone is figuring out how to switch careers or find something else. And so then I spent a long time researching, like, My joke was I was looking for like the Yahoo of career change. Like where's like the cheap place you go to like mix it up and like get some resources. And I kept not finding it. And I was thinking, oh, I'm using the wrong search terms. And I was trying to get really creative about the search terms. And then I started having like dreams about it. And I was like, I can't believe that like this doesn't exist for people. This is outrageous. You know, how are you like just letting people fend for themselves, like, but there are people who know, who look a science for this. Like there's people out there who can fix this for you. And so, I wrote a whole little like diatribe that I sent to my cousin, who's like an entrepreneurial, like a education entrepreneur. And he said, oh, this is so interesting. Let's talk about it. And let's see if I can help you like start something. And I'm not really like a, by nature, an entrepreneurial person. I mean, looking back, maybe I am, but like, I don't think of myself that way. And so I sort of came up with this idea to have it be a community of people, and it would be like Kumbaya, and it would be helping all these different groups who are having career change. And then what I realized is actually, what they really need is coaching, because, you know, there's a big hump to get over when you are making a big change like that. And I knew in my own life that speaking to family members or friends may not be the best way to get it done, because they're not trained in helping you see the forest for the trees. You know, they're not trained in like being an optimist. And so I reached out to a coach and I said, listen, like, what if we had these like 10? And so one of the groups was moms. So I said, what if we had these like 10 moms? We could do it over Zoom, and, you know, you wouldn't have to travel anywhere, and they could just split your rate by 10, and there would be 10 people, and, you know, they wouldn't have to worry about childcare or anything. And the coach said, oh, I would do that in a heartbeat. And I was like a big epiphany to me when I realized that, oh, also coaches need leads, not just that people need coaches. And so, in business school, so I'd gone to business school and in business school, there's always this hysterical thing going on where like, you know, it's like 500 people in the class and there'd always be like someone sending an email like every week, like, hey, do you guys want to buy like this leather jacket? Cause it's like 40 of us band together, you know, we get it for the wholesale cost. Or it was always like some deal like that, like banding together, getting a better deal, you know, this idea of like collaboration. And so that's like always in my mind is almost like a joke I had about just laughing about people sending these emails out. But anyway, but it made me think like, oh, this is a perfect opportunity to like split the cost and collaborate. And then I just realized, well, if I did that, it could really just be a marketplace. And then I would get out of the content game, which I was not good at anyway. And then what I realized also is I'm like a natural matchmaker. So it's like so easy for me to like think about connecting two sides within a marketplace. And then like once I kind of figured all that out, like I was like all in, you know, really excited about trying to make this work. And it took a little while because initially I thought it was like a B2C company, but now it's really more B2B. And that's because employers have budgets for this, for professional development. And because consumers have a hard time spending money on like $100 on like their brain as opposed to like a pair of jeans.
Yeah.
So it's just, and I'm not like great at social media. So all those factors came together.
Wow. Well, that is so cool. I love that you saw this need for coaches to find, you know, people to coach and for people to find coaches that are their right fit in that matchmaking process. So do you mostly work with businesses for finding coaches or is it individual or is it kind of a combination of both?
Yeah. So the best way to understand it is we have three stakeholders. So there's coaches who we vet and recruit and vet. So, you know, we background check and do all the things with them. And then the employers we basically market to. And then the employers are buying the professional development on behalf of their employees. And so theoretically, we could be marketing to the employees and have them like pitch their organization. But we've been mostly pitching to the organizations and kind of like as a large, big effect, you know, consulting throughout the organization. And so that we can also then help them with figuring out the return on investment and, you know, the impact and do surveys and do other ways of quantifying like what's happening.
Very cool. So let's talk about ROI for a second on this. So when a business invests in their employees and they decide to go through with coaching, what are the benefits of coaching? What are you seeing as far as feedback goes from the people that are being coached within these organizations?
Well, so there's one thing that this example that always pops to mind, which is that we worked with a group of doctors and it was initially the question was, we're worried about burnout. And so we did a survey, and the doctors themselves were more concerned or interested in communication strategies. And that was really interesting. So A, there sometimes can be a difference between the buyer and the user in understanding the problem. And then what we did was we did personal assessments. I mean, I didn't do it. I had brought in two excellent coaches who did this, but we did a personal assessment for them and then two like lectures on different kinds of communication. I think one was negotiation and one was making good promises or good, you know, like exchanges. I can't even say it properly, but basically the idea is like, if you're going to ask someone to do something, you have to give them like these like five things. And that was really interesting. And so it was a huge home run for these doctors because what's crazy is if you're a doctor, you are so well trained and you've been thinking about science and helping people for 10, 20 years, but there's almost no management training in the medical field. And so A, these doctors had never had a personal assessment. I had my first personal assessment in business school. And that was Myers-Briggs. And that like blew my mind when I took it. So I know that it can be really life-changing for people because sometimes you just don't realize like how you are, what you're like as relative to other people. You just know what you're like.
Yeah.
And that was really helpful for them. And then it just kind of got people talking about like better ways to communicate and we got like incredible, you know, we did a survey afterwards and it was like a home run for everyone. And they were just really delighted. And I think it's just ends up being the other way to say it is like, it just felt like there was like a weight was lifted because there's finally like a path that they were being shown to like alleviate some of the problems. They're like day in and day out problems.
That's really fascinating. And I love that approach to coaching, because when I think about coaching, especially individual coaching, it's more like those one-on-one sessions. Okay, what are your goals? What are your pain points? How can we get through this? But to look at it from that scale of it being, how is this impacting the group? And how can we just even give you a skill? You know, how can we help you communicate better with your patients or even just within your team? That's really fascinating. What is the typical, so when you work with businesses and they hire coaches, what does that package typically look like? Is it more so kind of like a group coaching environment like that, or is it more so individual sessions?
Oh yeah. Well, we really push the group coaching because it's much more affordable. And typically there isn't a budget for like, I call it like the sophisticated middle. Like if you're a CEO or CFO, you may get one-on-one coaching as part of your salary, you know, part of your benefit package. Whereas if you're, you know, like a practicing contributor, you're definitely not getting one-on-one coaching. And so, that's kind of what we always push. But if people want to, like, let's say that we're doing something like that and they really like the service we're providing, and then they also want us to provide a coach for one-on-one, we 100% will. Like, I'm doing that with another client. Mainly just because, unless you work with us continually, you could just do it on your own. Like, so we publish all of our coaches on our website, which is very rare in the coaching space, because we feel like, A, it's like an added benefit for the coaches, like to get their name out there a little more. It's like a little bit of SEO for them. But then also because if you, like, we don't want to hide who they are, and we want to really like be proud of who they are, but also say like, we're adding so much logistical support that unless you really are an expert on this like group stuff, you'd be better off just working with us and letting us handle it. You're not saving that much money. And then like what I would say to the coaches is like, my fantasy is if someone, you know, approaches you for group coaching independently, that you say, oh, well, let's just have Terawatt do it because it's not that much money like out of my pocket and it makes my life a lot easier. And so, so mostly we see more group because it's just like more scale, but it could be either way.
Very, very cool. What are kind of the criteria that you look for when you're hiring coaches for Terawatt?
Well, the first thing is that they have their own content, because we don't have a perspective. So, you know, we don't say like, oh, you got a problem with burnout, you should do X, Y, and Z, or, oh, you are worried about this, do, you know, we don't care. We have nothing like that. Like, there's no like have to. And like, I'm such a believer in like personal choice that's part of this. Like, so the coaches have their own content that they've been developing for years, or maybe they license somebody else's content. Like a lot of these personal assessments are licensed through a group. So they have their own content that they mostly do it full time. Sometimes people may be coaching on the side, but then their full time is doing actually the thing they're coaching for. So like we have a few like executives who coach on the side, and that's fine. But like, we really want someone who this is like their main business, not that they're kind of like, it's a side hustle. And then that their content is like B2B focused. So if there's somebody who's like helping people with LinkedIn or helping them with their resume, like that's not really for us. It's more about helping individuals contribute to the organization, to their employer who's paying for this. Sometimes people who are too salesy, they're not a fit. And sometimes people who are like overtly religious, that's not a great fit. But the number one thing I would say is like, you have to make me feel that like you care.
Yeah.
And like in the beginning, I was like, I would like end these calls, like crying with the stuff the coaches were saying. Cause it was like so beautiful. Aww. And then I kind of, my heart has hardened a little bit, and now I just like feel it in my heart, but I don't cry. And so, you know, like I call that like our proprietary system, and one day I'll figure out exactly like how to define that in like a, you know, AI questionnaire. But right now it's just manual, and I spend a lot of time with the coaches.
So back to kind of the beginning of the conversation, you said that you didn't anticipate necessarily being an entrepreneur. What has this process been like for you starting this business, and what has been the hardest part about starting it?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the hardest part, well, everything's the hardest part a little bit, but it's very frustrating when you're in the, you know, the desert, so to speak, right? Or you're in a plateau and you're trying to figure out how to do the thing that you're trying to do. And you don't know, trying to figure out who has the good advice, who doesn't have the good advice, what should I try? You know, which spaghetti should I throw at the wall? And I think a lot of entrepreneurialism is trial and error, because until you try it, you just don't know. I mean, you can have a really good strategy, but until you see how it works, that's really hard. And also it's really hard is when you look back and you see what has worked, and it seems so obvious once you know. Like, I just had that thought today. Like, it's just so frustrating to be like, oh, I could have done that like 6 months earlier, but it just didn't occur to me. That's super frustrating. So I think you have to like be patient with yourself and just say like, these errors or missteps or whatever, they're just part of the process, and, you know, not beat yourself up about it.
Well, and I love what you said in the beginning where, you know, when you first initially were thinking about this and to where it is now, it's completely different. And just by trying it out, you saw that you even had a different need come out of that than you initially thought. And so I like to think of that as almost part of like that market research, you know, just starting the process. And it is kind of part of, you know, just finding out what's going to be best and having that flexibility within the business model, I think, is crucial too.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And like someone once said something about that, like where they said, like, I really believe that the whole thing with startups is like, you're just meant to start, and almost everyone ends up somewhere completely different than where they started. And it's really true. Like, I just reached out to a friend because I was, someone was talking about mentorship and they're looking into it. And I said, oh, I know someone who's starting a mentorship thing. And I reached out to her and she's like, oh no, it's going to be a maternity app now. And I was like, whoa, that's so different. But, you know, okay, good for you. You know, like, it just, you know, it's what happens.
So with your coaching, do you help businesses with that element of business as well with the coaching, like kind of diving into the business model, or is it more so focused on employee retention?
Yeah. Okay. So good question. So typically what I'm looking for in the coaching side is just coaches that help individuals with like their performance. Like more about like how you communicate better, how do you be a better leader. We have a few coaches that do like business coaching for the business, and that's more like an SMB, like a small, medium business kind of pitch. We haven't ever had actually anyone purchase that from us. So I haven't like aggressively looked for those coaches, but it's really about the like, you know, the mindset of the individuals and helping them communicate and collaborate better in like the myriad ways. And so I always like to start with a problem, and that's why I talk about like turnover a lot or even burnout is like, it's a really obvious problem you can have. Like, you know, you've got a turnover problem because you know, you'll know the numbers, or, you know, same with burnout, like people are starting to leave and leave the industry or something. They start to see these trends. So that's really, I'd say, the key there.
What do you think is the main reason for turnover? And do you feel like that main reason applies across industries, or is it really just industry focused?
So from what I've read, my understanding is like burnout is what happens when you no longer identify with like the value or the goal of your job. And so like there's this beginning where you are attracted to an area because you really wanted to do this thing that this job allows you to do. Like maybe in, let's say, a hospital, it's like making people's lives better, saving people, extending their life, you know. And then there's this period where maybe you feel a little disillusioned, but you think, well, I'm still getting paid. No, that's great. You know, paying my bills. And then there's the next stage where it's kind of like the money doesn't make up for the disillusionment.
Yeah.
And that can be anywhere. The one thing that I like to talk about with regards to burnout is that it's really discussed as an individual problem. Like, we'll say like, that person's burned out, or are you burned out, or how to check if you're burned out. But ultimately, burnout is what happens in a human, like one human, as a result of a system-wide dysfunction or problem. And so that's my big thing, which is that you can't just point to people and be like, oh, let's get rid of that person. They're burned out. They couldn't handle it. There's something else broader going on that should probably be addressed. And I think that drives me crazy because it's not like you can't just, I'm still struggling always for what the good analogy is, but there's got to be a really good analogy. It's like, it's a system-wide problem. It's not the individual. And, you know, there, I haven't yet come up with a good analogy, but one day I will. And I think it's easier to like focus on the person with the burnout and say, oh, it's not our fault. Like we didn't create this. It's something faulty with them. And I think that that's going to be found out to be really wrong.
So you identify the problem within the organization. That's what the coach kind of helps you do. What has been, can you give us an example of one of the solutions that one of the coaches has provided for an organization that's facing that issue?
Yeah, I mean, it really can be all kinds. So a lot of times I get in trouble with the coaches because sometimes we're doing coaching and sometimes we're doing training. It's like you have to be very careful about like what you call coaching. And so it's usually a combination of some sort of training, a personal assessment, and coaching. And like another example that we did is we worked with a team of senior leaders at a tech company, and we helped. So what was it? The coach worked with the HR and learning and development woman who was like organizing this whole thing. So there's like individual coaching for the HR person implementing this. And then for this group of like five or six executives, they were basically having a series of conversations tying their like KPIs over the year to like their goals, their personal goals, and like talking through how their personal goals and their company goals related to the employees' feedback on the company. And so there was a lot going on. And I think that was mostly free form, I think, coaching and discussion. But it can be anything, like I said, like it could be much more like technical training. Usually it's, if it's training, it's not like learning how to do Excel, like this is the right way and the wrong way. It's more like, here's a framework.
Yeah.
And giving, and like really, cause a lot of what coaching really is helping people realize that how they're seeing it is a choice. Like the mental space is a choice, and you can choose to have a different way of viewing it. And that like opens up and unlocks for a lot of people.
I love that framework too. I'm very familiar with coaching, and I've always been told too that, you know, everybody has that answer within inside themselves already when you're just asking those questions to get them to that answer. So it sounds like that's what y'all are doing with like that reframe of the mindset and just all of those business processes that are happening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think like, or there's so many examples. Like one coach I know does the Enneagram, and that's really helpful in understanding like how you relate to other people. And like you could do that as a group, you know, and there's so many different ways to like help people like, again, like see the forest for the trees a little bit and like understand how they relate. And I think it gives like more patience to people and more grace to like let people like make errors and not be as reactionary and all kinds of things like that. And I think what's cool about the group coaching as opposed to individual is what's nice about group is that you're all learning it together. So therefore, you're not the only one who knows this. Like other people know it too. Like you can feel really lonely if like you feel like you've gotten like a lot of wisdom, but everyone's driving you crazy because like they're not giving you grace or they're not being patient with you, right? So that's part of the thing too, is like letting more people than just the C-suite have access to like all this wisdom.
What do you feel like success rate wise, how long does it take people typically or organizations from the time that they've had the group session to after the fact to kind of implement those changes and really have that betterment within their organization?
Oh, I think immediately. I mean, we've seen stuff happens immediately because people get so excited that they want to practice it right away. Like I think a tougher question for me that I wouldn't know how to answer would be like, what happens after 6 months?
Yeah.
And like, and then how do you hold yourself accountable? And like, we talk about that like internally and with clients and stuff. And I think like the key really is to, after you do this, is to get other people involved and committed to whatever it is that you change so that it becomes part of like your a review process. Like, are you still doing X, Y, and Z? Or maybe even having like a coaching partner who you kind of work with, and you kind of keep each other, you support each other by these, with these frameworks or whatever, and going back to the basics and, you know, remembering like what that was. Because I think it's like when you're always alone and in your head, things get warped and twisted and you forget and you get distracted. And I think that, again, like, I just think that the community is a nice way to kind of keep it going, but it can, and time can really be the killer if you don't keep investing.
Yeah. And I think that's, like you said, like, that's the main thing that I've noticed is organizations oftentimes have every good intention to reframe things. But if people are already used to that framework being the way that it is, and now you've introduce something else, sometimes it takes a minute for it to kind of adopt and flow into that newness.
Yeah. And I think that also, like, I mean, I don't, maybe people are doing this, but I do think that, like, finding ways to reward people for what you want to see in the organization is so valuable. Like, whether that's like, you know, I nominate so-and-so for like most creative employee this month, or, you know what I mean? Like, ways to just get people realizing that their job is to do more than just like answer emails, you know, it's to like come up with new ideas and impact and be creative and save money and all these things. And the more that you can kind of reward that and make it exciting and maybe a little bit competitive, you know, I think that it works wonders.
Well, and that probably, I mean, directly impacts the turnover rate. When employees feel the value, they're not as inclined to leave.
Yes. I mean, because I think that, I even knowing myself, I think all these things, it's like, if you feel like you could just be as miserable, you know, if you're miserable, $10,000 more a year is a worthwhile reason to leave.
Yeah.
And it's not really that much money. You know, I mean, it's nice. It's more money than you had. But like, if you felt like this was like the most perfect job you've ever had and you're so fulfilled by it, you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't feel like an extra $10,000 would be worth it. And that's what I think organizations need to realize, need to start working on. Like, and that's why all these things matter. Like, your manager matters, you know, your employees matter, you know, the people all the systems matter, and what kind of support you have from your bosses and movement and growth. And like, when a lot of times when this comes up, this idea of like supporting professional growth, employers will say, well, listen, like, I don't want to make it so easy to get better at your job because we can only have so many people we promote. And then what you say is, you know what? It's not your job. Your job is just to provide them the education and see where the chips fall. Not everyone may want to be promoted. You know, you have to just realize that you will have an alumni base of people that think fondly about your organization, and maybe they come back after a few years or something, but you're growing people, and it's not your job to worry about where to put them.
Absolutely. No, and I love that you mentioned the alumni base, because I think that that's really important, you know, going back to that culture within an environment. If you're creating a space where people want to work, they're going to be thinking highly of your organization, and then they're going to give you top talented people because they really enjoyed working for you.
Yeah, exactly. And like, nothing bad happens when you have like a great alumni base who enjoys you, especially like, so I was talking to someone who was on the accounting side, and they were saying how the accountants have really figured this out. Is like, all, you know, if you're an internal like accounting firm, whenever people leave, they're often going to the clients. So you want to give them a good experience, because they might end up sending you business, and you start to realize how circular like the whole thing is. And so, you know, I think, again, like, you just have to look at it with from a perspective of abundance, and like, things will all work out. And so we were just saying before we started taping, right, that like, it used to be that it was like 7 touches before someone made a purchase, and now it's 17. So fine, we're in the space of 17. You have to have 17 touches. Maybe 1 or 2 are like good alumni saying nice things about you that you can't control, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, that would be an incredible support to any sales organization.
I almost want to reframe that 17 touches into how we treat our employees too within our organization. Like, maybe it takes 17 acts of service or just recognition for employees to feel like this is valuable to me. I have a lot of value being in this company versus like the seven of like, oh, well, you get, you know, paid time off and you have health insurance and that's all fine and well. Like that's the only thing that matters, you know?
I love that. That's a great idea. Because I think that organizations really struggle with like how to connect more with the employee. And they're kind of like, I'm doing everything I can. But like, I think that's great. Like one of my suggestions always is like, I think that like doing a survey and then acting on it is like an incredible boon for an employee. Like yeah. you said, like you guys should do this. And then they did it like, okay, you know, like this is a place you want to be because like they're actually listening to you. And I think that's such a cool way of thinking about it. And actually, it's really smart too, because they say, right, being an employee somewhere or an employer is kind of like also selling to your employees, right? You're selling on them as an employer. And so kind of, I think it does make a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, and you're selling your mission and your vision for the company, you know, to your employees, because those are actively the people that are acting out, you know, the day-to-day operations of it. So I think that the more that they understand where you're coming from and that your values and instilling your core values as your brand into your employees, then they're more inclined to feel that way as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. And I think, and connecting them, like, what's the word? Explicitly connecting how their values are tied to what they're doing with their employees is, I think, helps people a lot. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think you could write a book about that. That'd be great.
Well, you're going to write the book about it because you're the expert in this field.
Oh, God. That's the joke. I'm like the package maker. A few people say to me like, oh, are you going to write a book? Because apparently a lot of people are writing books now. And I'm like, I don't even know what I would say. So no, not right now.
I feel like you have a lot to say.
I know. I have a lot of opinions, but I'm not sure how that would be like a book. That's what I have to work on.
Well, I'm sure that answer will come to you in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Francie, this has been so wonderful. I'm just so grateful to have you on the show, and I've learned a lot about this approach, and I find this to be really fascinating, you know, coaching and how it lies within business and how it can help businesses grow and be better just towards their employees and also just as a business in general. Are there any last pieces of advice or anything that you would like to share more about TerraWatt or just you with our listeners?
No, I think just, you know, I would just say I think that the real lesson, so I'm Gen X. So when I started my career, I was working for baby boomers, and now we hear all about millennials and Gen Z. And so I feel very like in the middle of all this like generational stuff, but I see it so clearly, like there's a lot of generational friction, I think. And I think the best way to, and it's funny because whatever you're doing for Gen Z, that works for everyone. You know, it's like one of those things. But the more that you can just connect with employees and find ways to listen to their feedback and act on it, even in little ways, I think that that is a huge boon for organizations. And I know that they have trouble trying to figure out how to do that in scale and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one way just to start is like just a series of surveys and seeing where that goes, or even like, you know, an employee group who gets together, who's advocating for something, you know, I mean, I just think more ways to get people engaged in things that are interesting and they can be a little bit creative about and have it not be like lots of rules will just be so fascinating. And I can tell that, you know, I can see this, like the HR lady's like, well, I don't know how to connect, you know, with the employees very well. And I really just think that like, it just come up with like little things or like little rewards or fun reasons to go to networking stuff, not like just for the sake of networking, right? It's like, we're all learning how to crochet or, you know, I don't know, like if someone's teaching a skill, like, I don't know. I just think that getting creative about like connecting people is a really cool way to connect.
I love that you've touched on creativity and connection, because I think that, yeah. I mean, you might know this more than I do, but I think that a lot of times when people are unsatisfied, it's because they feel that lack of connection. And I think that creativity is so important into who we just are as people. And so if organizations, you know, touched on that, then maybe people would feel more fulfilled in their careers and in their jobs. Are you finding that there's a big difference between the generations in the workforce and what they want out of their work?
Yeah, well, what they want out of work. I mean, and I think in a lot of ways we're all humans, so we all kind of want the same thing. I think that they act differently in order to kind of get it. Like, I laugh because all the things that Gen Z are like, you know, pounding the table for, I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. I like that too. But I was working for people that were like, you will get nothing in Lincoln. You're like, okay. Or they're like, no, I say how high, and you know, I say jump and you say how high. And I think part of it's a little bit like what you're used to and what you like, maybe expectations. But I do think that like all the stuff that the Gen Z wants helps everyone. Like, you know, no one wants to hear this, but everyone wants flexibility. You know, everyone wants to be creative. Everyone wants to make, you know, make an impact. I think, you know, I think what hits hard for everyone that I see, like, I was just having this conversation the other night with somebody. It's like, they want to be supportive of their employees, but sometimes they also just want to be like, just get it done, goddammit. You know, yeah. And I think that's a little bit like the friction that everyone has. I can't imagine that like everyone doesn't have that problem going in. And so it's like, it's probably annoying whenever there's like a new generation coming in who like seems like excited and like wants to chat with you about like shortcut keystrokes on Excel or something. And you're like, just get it done. Like, I don't listen to this. But, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
Are you finding issues with work ethic? Because that's what's kind of coming to mind right now, like between generations. Like, I feel like I hear constantly from generations that are above mine, like Gen Z is just really not hardworking. They don't want to do any of the work and they want all of the benefit of that. And so, you know, they want the higher salary. They want more time off and all of these things, but they're not willing to put in that hard work. Are you finding that that's like a contention point?
Yeah, I mean, I hear that a lot, but I'm also Gen X. You know, so I'm probably like around people of my age who are like complaining that these people don't have a strong work ethic. I mean, I always wonder about those situations. But the one thing I will say is, you know, everyone was always, you know, when I was like a young worker, everyone's always talking about work-life balance and how do you attain it and all these things. And, you know, it was like a big discussion, you know, it was like how can we get to this? Whatever Xanadu of work-life balance. And I think the younger generations have heard all that and they're like assumed that that's something that they're actually talking about in the offices, whereas we would just talk about outside the office.
Yeah.
So they'd be like, oh, great, work-life balance. Like, I got to leave at 5. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, the owner's still here. Like, not, no. And so I think that there's like, a mismatch in like a discussion topic versus how you lead your life. And then, so I'd say that, but then I'd also say, I see this is a whole discussion I've been having with my family. Like, my daughter recently got really into field hockey and it's so cute. Like, she wants to do field hockey fall, winter, spring, and then summer camps, fall, summer, field hockey. And I'm like, so delighted because like there's nothing better than a kid who's like pounding the table to do something, like rather than me being like, oh, try this sport, oh, I want to quit it, I hate drama. Like, I mean, there's constant like trying, stopping, and like that makes me stressed out as a parent because I'm like, well, is this kid ever gonna like anything? And now I'm like, wow, it just feels so relieving to have them be like so committed. And I think like same thing, like if you have an employee who's coming up to you every day like, I just want to get better, like, what more can I learn? You know, I just, I want to be better tomorrow. Like, can we sit down and you give me some feedback? Like, that's appealing versus somebody's like, I gotta go. I'm playing golf in 20 minutes. And I think that it's not that unless you show and relay to the employer, like what your goals are, all they see, like what they remember is the stuff that's like out of the mores. And that is like, the leaving early, I'm using the air quotes, but, you know, or doing things that like the older generations didn't do. And it doesn't mean that they're not as ambitious. They're just like somehow not communicating it. And so that's what I sometimes wonder about. Like, but I hear it all the time because so my husband works in private equity and like there's, oh my God, all these chats about people just leaving too early and, you know, having to go away for long periods for vacations. And so It's very common to hear, yeah.
Do you think that people more so than ever are wanting more vacation time?
No, I mean, again, I think it's just related to this whole thing about passion. Like, I think the assumption is if you're really passionate, you're not trying to max out your vacation time and you're not trying to max out your personal time. But I think, to be fair, like, I think there can be a middle road. Like, I think everyone who employs someone wants to have someone who's super hungry to get better and like works 24/7. But I think in the long run, you realize you want a balanced person, because the extraordinarily hungry person who's always going to be working and always learning, like, they kind of burn out. They're a little bit one-dimensional, maybe. Like, you know, are they bringing anything else to the table besides like being an expert on their job? Because ultimately, the goal is to grow people. So, I mean, I think that's sort of the question, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I love, you know, that point about passion too, because I think that, you know, for a lot of people, and we talked about alumni within, you know, different organizations, is that person might not be passionate long term about this business. That's not what they want out of their life. Maybe they want to do something else unrelated to that field, but this is just a touching stone for them. And this is where they're learning some of those skills that might lead them to what they're meant to do later. And so just having that like abundance mindset of, well, I can still give to my employee and I can still be a good base for them to learn these skills so they can then do what they're called to do or whatever else they're meant to do. I think that mindset shift is really important.
Yeah. And it's funny, as you're saying that, that's like 100% what I agree with. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. And then if you have these very linear thinkers, they're like, well, that's not my job.
Yeah.
My job is profits and revenue. And so I think then, like, it's our job then to show how the abundance mindset is related to profit and revenue. And I think that's sort of the key, because it's true. Like, we're not in, and no one's in business to like just make the world better. Like, maybe some people really are. I mean, a lot of people, it's America, right? A lot of people are capitalists, like they want to make money. So I think you need to say, like, it's the more that you make your employees' lives better and you find the middle path that makes everyone happy, the better off your business will be. And I think, you know what I mean? I think like that's the, I think that's like the thing that we need all need to like start to really believe in our hearts.
Absolutely. Well, Francie, I love this. I want you to coach. I don't have a business right now that has a lot of employees, but someday I want you to have your coaches coach my people, because I love that so much.
Yeah. We have the best coaches. Oh,
oh, that's wonderful. Is there a certain amount of employees that a business typically has for your services?
No, I mean, it could be anything. Like, my rule of thumb is that I think that you want to have a large number of employees, let's say like over 200, so that the group that's getting the coaching can be like a subset from across the company. You know, my like fantasy always for the companies is to have like, it could be like new managers, or it could be like, you know, working moms, or, you know, some affinity group where like touches across all departments. Like, you're having someone from accounting. And so it becomes a little bit of networking within the company. They're sharing like institutional knowledge, and they're able to bring it back to like their groups. But it can be anything. Cause like, we also like our coaches will be happy. A lot of them will be very happy to work with like four people, five people. And if that's a whole company, great, you know? So it really depends. And I think it's a little bit of like coach bandwidth, you know, if you're like, if you're remote and you're over Zoom, like 1 to 40 is hard.
Right.
You know, so that's where the numbers kind of come into play. Like that one thing we had where we had the two coaches, it was about 40 people on the other side. That was in person.
Wonderful. And where can we find more about Terawatt and just these services?
Yeah, so terawatt.co, just terawatt.co, no M. That's our website. And then we're like most active on LinkedIn, both me and then Terawatt, the company. We have pages, and, you know, I share all the things, and I try to, you know, make good insights as I see them.
And I know you're based in Connecticut. Are your coaches all based in Connecticut? Are they everywhere? Are their services only virtual? Are they in person?
Oh, yeah, they're everywhere. We have people in Europe, South America, Canada, U.S.
Wow.
They can do anything. The thing is, like, it's funny because I envision this as like virtual to save money, but there are a lot of people that really care about in person. And so what that means is you just have to pay, the buyer has to pay for the travel of the coach. But, you know, like I, my joke is like coaches are capitalists. Like they're happy to go, you know, where you would like them to go. So don't worry about that. And then like for the international stuff, you know, I'm like really ambitious about Terawatt and I think it can be global like easily. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to like bring knowledge from different countries and different regions to others, like affordably. Yeah. Using the same idea of like the dividing it by the group and stuff. And so, I mean, I just think like there's so much opportunity to help people. So we would help. I would do anything. You know, the only thing that could be a problem, right, is like the time zone. And that that's the only issue. So if someone, let's say we have a coach in like Portland, Oregon, like and somebody in South Africa wants them to coach them. And if it's like 12 or 13 hours like that, when it's the exact like 12 or 16 hour difference, that is so hard to connect. Yeah. But you know, there, I'm sure there are ways around it. Again, you know, there's always a way, but that's when it can get tricky.
Wonderful. Well, I will be sure to link that in the show notes for everybody so we can just learn more about, you know, your brand and if they want to book a session with you, they absolutely can. So that's wonderful. Well, I have one more question for you. Yeah. And this is a question that I like to ask all of my guests as we kind of end the show. And that question is a fill in the blank Mad Lib style question. So it is, you have to blank to blank.
Yes. So my first, I think this is a good one. So let me know what you think. I think you have to invest to grow. And whether it's time or money or attention, like if you want growth, there needs to be some kind of commitment and like, what's the word? Just serious commitment, you know, like serious grit, because it's not all these things that we're talking about are actually kind of hard to do.
I love that so much. What's the second one? Just because I'm curious.
Oh, I could do 1,000 of these. and so we have, what's the phrase again? It's like, if you want to blank, you have to blank.
You have to blank to blank.
Yeah. Okay. Here's one that I like. I just came up with this, but I believe this deeply. You have to sleep in order to think.
Ooh, that's important. Sleep is really important.
Right. I think that sleeping is like the number one thing. And I just, because I have a child, right? So I think about this kind of stuff all the time. But like, I really think that like sleep is like the basis for like
life. Yeah. How many hours of sleep do you get a night?
A lot. I would say at least 8 or 9.
Oh my gosh. I'm so jealous. I can't get past, it's like 7.5 is like my max amount these days.
Well, maybe that's just your thing. You know, sometimes I think that like, you know, your body sort of tells you. And if you feel like you're having like brain fog, like maybe you need more sleep. But if you're like, you know, firing all cylinders.
There you go. Do you have any recommendations for better sleep?
Yeah. Oh, I've got a lot. yes. Well, one is, I think, reading a book before you go to bed. But that doesn't work for everyone. But I really think reading, not a magazine, a book. Because magazine I find stimulating with the images and stuff. Reading a book, taking a hot bath before you go to bed. That's very helpful. If you can tolerate milk, a hot cup of milk people really love. I think like really comfy sheets. Like I have these flannel sheets right now and it's like wintertime. I love them.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing.
It really helps me, yeah. Or a good pillow. You know, a good routine, I think a good routine is really valuable, or like even also like a good routine for the morning. So you go to bed knowing everything's organized. Like you're going to come up, you know what you're going to wake up. You know how you're going to wash your face and all the things. Like, I think that is really helpful. Earplugs. Typically.
Yeah. I've tried those recently, and also sleeping in the cold. That's been really helpful for me. I don't know why, but yeah, not worrying about getting too hot at night has been really helpful. And then the earplugs thing.
Yeah, that's like sleeping in the cold is some weird human thing. I haven't researched why that is, but it's like a thing for humans.
So interesting. I know there's a Arianna Huffington, I think she has like a whole book about sleep, and it's called like Sleep Revolution or something. And she talks about this, and I haven't read the book. I have the book though. I should read that one.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. I mean, I think that like, do you have any kids?
I don't.
Oh, yeah. So one thing that sort of happens when you first like have a baby is like they're basically nocturnal because they would be awake when you were quiet. And then like vice versa, like when you were active, that would like lull them to sleep because it was like your heartbeat. And so you first have to like train this kid how to not be nocturnal. And then you start to realize if they get bad sleep, like they are so cranky during the day and so annoying. And so then it becomes like this whole thing about like, how do they get good sleep? Like, are they taking a nap? Are they not taking a nap? And like, what, you know, do they get woken up by the trash truck and all these things? And I think that just really applies to humans too. Like, you just don't see it as like obviously in humans because they don't have temper tantrums, but I think it's the same biology.
Absolutely. We all have our own rhythm, so it's about finding what works best for you.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, exactly. And being really thoughtful about like, does this work for me? If it doesn't, then what am I going to change?
Mm-hmm.
Or how can I make it better and not be frustrated or cranky, you know, for a day and, you know, ruining opportunities or whatever.
Absolutely. And I know I already said this was the last question, but I have one more for you because you mentioned it. So I'm just curious. What are you reading currently?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Actually, honestly, this is what I'm reading. This is a woman I was on a podcast with, Lisa Gibson. It's called Shine the Spotlight on You.
I love that.
Yeah. So she was basically like an in-house PR person at Microsoft. And then she went out on her own and she started like advising executives on how to speak publicly and how to like have like personal branding. And I bought it because A, I wanted to support her. She like self-published it and all this stuff. But also because what is personal branding? I find it so annoying when people are talking about personal branding. I'm like, I do not know what you mean. And so I bought this book to kind of like learn and like, and so I'm kind of learning. And basically it's like picking a few things that like you talk about that then people can kind of like associate with you. And that seems like that they kind of know you because you talk about these things. It doesn't have to be like your whole life. It's just like a few things you're picking to be public about.
I love that. Have you thought more about what that means for you and how you kind of brand with your business?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. 100%. Like she has like, what's nice about it is she has like worksheets, like draw a column doing this, draw a column this, and then pick these things from the columns. And I'm like, now that is helpful because like, otherwise I just get so overwhelmed by like the possibilities, but to have someone like truly break it down to like the nuts and bolts is really helpful.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that resource. I'm going to link that one in the show notes as well.
Yeah, oh, great. Yeah, she'd be a great podcast guest.
Yeah, I would love to have her on. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, Francie, this has been an absolute pleasure. You were such a delight, and I am so excited for people to take in this information that you shared. So I really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much, lady. It's a real pleasure. Good luck to you, and I hope Nashville continues to be lovely and gorgeous and warm.
Thank you so much for listening. If you found value in today's conversation, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. And as always, don't forget to share this episode with anyone that you think could benefit. And for more information about today's guest, be sure to check out the show notes. We'll see you next time.